Hi everyone, today's Parak of Rambam is the 24th chapter of Hilchos Ishos, the second to final chapter in all of Hilchos Ishos. In this Parak, the Rambam will discuss different cases of women who are forbidden to their husband in one way or the other, and therefore might potentially lose out on their ksuba.
Halacha Aleph. Hanosi es ha'ilanes, v'lo hayu lo banim v'lo isha acheres lefros rebos v'mena. Afal pi shekofno so umotzi, harehi kechol ha'nashim v'yesh la ksuba ushar tznoi ksuba. If somebody marries a woman who is infertile, and he doesn't have any other children, nor does he have a wife from whom he can hope to have other children. Even though we will ultimately force him to divorce this wife, nonetheless, this wife who's infertile counts as every other wife does, and she has claimed a ksuba from him, as well as all the other stipulations of the ksuba. And similarly, the husband will gain all the rights that he would normally gain with regards to any other woman he would marry. Halacha Beis. However, if somebody married a woman and he didn't realize that she was infertile, or she was somebody who was forbidden to him on a level where if he were to have this relationship, he would be liable to have lashes. And similarly, if somebody married a woman who is a secondary type of immoral relationship, one which is only rabbinic in nature, whether he had recognized that she was this relationship to him or whether he did not, in any of these cases, the woman has no claim on the foundational element of the ksuba, the 100 or 200 respectively, nor on any of the stipulations which ordinarily go along with the ksuba. However, she does have any excess amount that he had written into the ksuba. Furthermore, she has no claim to sustenance from his estate even after he dies. And when we force them to be divorced, we finally succeed in having them break up this forbidden relationship, we don't take from the husband any of the produce which he has consumed during the time that they were married. Halacha Gimel. V'lama ein lahen ikar v'yesh lahen tosefes. Now why is it that these women listed above have no claim to the foundational element of the ksuba, the 100 and 200 respectively, but they do have claim to the excess which was written into the ksuba? Ha'ikar shu tekanes chacham k'deish lo tia kalav einav lo tia ho v'lo ha'ikar ba ein la ikar. The Rambam explains. With regards to the foundational element of the ksuba, which was only an enactment by Chazal so that way a husband wouldn't be quick to divorce his wife, well, in this case, since Chazal don't really want her to be married to this man, then it's not a case where they would have enacted it. However, with regards to the excess which he had written into the ksuba, well, in this case, he's obligated himself to it. And as long as she's doing her part, she's living up to the standards of being a wife, and therefore she has given herself over to him in a certain level for his benefit, so then he must stand by the same stipulation he had said. After all, it's the Torah which forbade her to him. What's she supposed to do otherwise? Therefore, she has the claim to that excess which she had written to the ksuba, because it isn't her actions which are causing her to be forbidden to him after the marriage, as we will see with regards to adultery, is the case. Here, it's not her fault. She was forbidden to him from the beginning, and therefore she has claim to that excess. Halacha Dalet. V'lama lo chilkuba shniya, bein sheker ba, bein shelo heker ba, el amru ein la'ikar ksuba b'chol makom. Now, the Rambam then notes, why is it that Chazal didn't distinguish between a woman who is a secondary level erva, which is only rabbinic in nature, whether the husband had recognized that she had this relationship to him or whether he did not, and either way she loses out on the foundational element of the ksuba, unlike in a case where it was something seemingly more severe, something which was a biblical command that they couldn't be together. The Rambam explains, "Bnei shehim midvarei sofrim asu b'chizuk," because it's rabbinic in nature, they had to strengthen it. They reinforced it. They gave it additional strength. However, if the husband married this woman who was forbidden to him on a Doraisa level, on a Torah level, as something where he would receive lashes for marrying her, and he knew this, or he had married somebody who is forbidden to him only with regards to having violated a positive command, whether he knew about this or he didn't know about this relationship to her, in these cases, yesh la ksuba. She does have claim on a ksuba on him. Shechayvi lavin shehikar ba, ratz lahazik ben achasav, v'chayvi asay, isurin ka. The Rambam explains the rationale for each. With regards to those who are forbidden to him on a Torah level, he, when he recognized her as being such, chose to hurt himself. He chose to obligate himself in this fashion, to damage his assets, and therefore he's bound himself to it. With regards to those who are only forbidden in the sense that by marrying them you've failed to live up to a positive command, in that case, the reason why she still has a ksuba, whether he had recognized this or not, is simply because it's a relatively light prohibition. And with regards to both of these types of women, the wife has claim to sustenance after the husband dies from his estate. Similarly, if she were to borrow money and then provide support for herself in that fashion, so then he is obligated to make up that debt. And when we eventually force them to get divorced, so then we cause the husband to also have to pay back all the produce which he ate that he gained during the time when he was using her assets. If a girl was married off while she was a minor by her brothers or by her mother, who are not able to do so on a Torah level, and then she chooses to refuse her husband by doing a process called miyun, so she has no claim for a ksuba, but she does have a claim on the excess that was written into it. We also, in this case, do not take from the husband any of the produce which he had consumed during the time that they were married. Similarly, if she had borrowed money in order to support herself while she was married to him, and she consumed the produce, and then afterwards she did this process of miyun, of refusing the husband, so then we don't cause the husband to have to pay up for those funds. Helchavav. Misha zinsa tachas baila, ein lo ksuba, lo ikr, lo tosefes, lo echem etzanai ksuba. Shari ma'aseha garmula liyaser al baila. This is what we alluded to beforehand. If a woman does cause, through her actions, to become forbidden to her husband, such as if she commits adultery, so then she has no claim on a ksuba, not the foundational element, not anything excess that he writes into it, not any of the stipulations. Because, again, it was her actions which caused her to become forbidden to her husband. Now, with regards to all the women that were explained so far, how do we deal with the dowry that they had brought into the marriage, the property that they had owned initially? Any woman whose dowry is still extant, even if she had committed adultery, nonetheless, she's able to take that dowry and leave. If she was one of these secondary rabbinic types of forbidden relationships, or she was one of the forbidden relationships that is only forbidden because of a positive command, so whether the husband had recognized this relationship or he had not, or whether she was somebody who was infertile, or was a biblically prohibited woman with regards to a negative prohibition, and the husband had recognized it with regards to these two latter cases, in that case, her dowry is hers fully, just as it would be with all other women. With regards to the assets defined as tzon barzel, the husband is still obligated in this case in its responsibility. If it had gone up or down, he gained those losses or he gained those gains, and he is obligated to still pay back that which he had taken. With regards to the nechsei melug, the property where the wife has the responsibility, if something has been stolen or lost, it's been lost for her, and the husband is not obligated to pay. If this woman was somebody who was infertile, or one of the prohibitions on a Torah level, so in that case, if he hadn't recognized that she had this status, then even with regards to the nechsei tzon barzel, the ones where he ordinarily is responsible for, anything which is lost or stolen or withered or destroyed in some fashion, was ground up, in that case, the husband is still not obligated to pay. Because she was the one who had given him permission to have them by him. However, with regards to anything which was lost or stolen from the things that she had responsibility on, paradoxically, he is obligated to pay. The opposite, as is true with regards to other women. Because since there wasn't actually real binding marriage in this case, so then he did not gain the rights to those nechsei melug. Halachates. With regards to that underage girl who had been married and then refused her husband, she has no claim on these withered remnants at all, because we don't take something away from the husband if they had been lost or stolen from her assets, whether we're dealing with Nechsei Melug or Nechsei Tzon Barzel. Rather, she takes that which is actually there extant right now, and then she leaves. As was already stated, a woman who committed adultery while married to her husband has no claim on a ksuba, has no claim on its foundational element or its excess. Furthermore, we don't take anything from the husband in order to compensate her for the losses of her nechzitzon barzel, whether it had been lost or stolen. It goes without saying that the items which ordinarily she is responsible for, the nechzitzon malug, he certainly doesn't have to pay back for. The Rambam now clarifies that it's not with regards to a woman who had committed adultery alone that this is true, but it's even true with a woman who had violated the basic guidelines, rules of what it means to be a Jewish woman according to Torah law or general Jewish faith, or somebody who is being divorced because of some bad reputation she had earned. So in these cases, she has no claim to a ksuba, not the foundational element, not the excess, not one of the stipulations. However, as was also already noted, all these different types of women are able to take the dowry that they have brought into the marriage, that still belongs to them, but the husband is not obligated to pay them for anything, nothing that was withered down, nothing that was lost. Now, what does it mean for a woman to violate the faith of Moshe, the rules of Moshe, these Torah-level obligations? So Rambam gives us a long list now. If she goes out into the marketplace and the hair on her head is uncovered, or she takes vows or swears and she doesn't fulfill them, or she has relations with her husband while she is a menstruant, or she doesn't separate challah from her dough, a gift that must be given to the kohen, or she feeds her husband things which are forbidden. It goes without saying if she feeds him actually non-kosher, as we colloquially refer to them, as animals, even things which simply hadn't been tithed. Now, how do we discover whether the wife has properly been doing these things or not? For example, if the wife said to him, Peros elu ploni kohen tignamli. Well, you can discover her lie if she says that these pieces of produce had been properly tithed by this kohen, or this dough was done by this woman, or that this particular Talmud Chacham had said that this stain on her undergarments was actually a pure one, and that after he ate that food or had relations with her, so he asked the individual that she had cited, and that individual says, that never happened. Similarly, if it was well known amongst her neighbors that she was in a state of menstruation, and she told her husband that she was pure, and then he had relations with her, unbeknownst to him, so in that case as well, that's considered overis al das Moshe. Halachiyud beis. Beis hu das yudis. Now, what does it mean, this standard of Jewish faith that a woman could potentially violate? The Rambam explains that is the standard custom of modesty that is upkept and that's prevalent amongst the Jewish women. The Rambam now gives us a list of these are the items which a person can do in order to transgress this Jewish faith. If a woman goes out into the marketplace, into an open alleyway, and her hair is uncovered, and she doesn't have it fully covered in the way of having some sort of wrap, some veil over her head, like the normal custom amongst women, but rather it's partially covered, but partially not. Oshai sa tova bashuk, uvered v'kiyoti bo, k'neged paneha, apadachta, v'alecha eha, k'derek sh'osim, hobri k'chavim ha'prutos. Or, if she's spinning flax or wool with some rose on her face, on her forehead, or on her cheek, just like the immoral, immodest, non-Jewish woman. Oshai tova bashuk, umari zero sehel ibn adam. Or she's spinning in the marketplace, and she displays her forearms for people to see. Or she was playing frivolously with young men. Or she demands in a loud voice to have relations with her husband, to the point where her neighbors are able to hear her asking about these matters. Or she curses her husband's father in front of her husband. Ezra the Sofer, the great prophet, the great leader of Klal Yisrael, had instituted that a woman should wear a special type of belt in her house at all times as a way of displaying modesty. If she doesn't wear this, so then she has not violated the Das Moshe, and she hasn't lost her ksuba. Similarly, if she goes out from one courtyard to the next with her hair uncovered, within one alleyway, going from, again, one courtyard to another courtyard. In the olden days, they had houses, which led into courtyards, which led into alleyways. So she goes from one courtyard through the alleyway into the other courtyard with her hair partially uncovered. But since she has it partially covered as well, she has not been considered somebody who is Oberes Aldas. Oberes Aldas, Trichasra, the Adim, Achagachatas, Xubasa. If somebody is going to violate our faith in this sense to lose her Xuba, she first needs a warning and witnesses in order for her to then later lose her ksuba. Avra beino lebeina, if she simply transgressed between him and her, just the two of them, and the husband knows that she's doing this, the hisrabani warned her below Adam without any witnesses, the chazra of Avra, and then she went ahead and transgressed again, hu toin v'omer achar asra Avra, v'hi omeres lo avarti klal, o lo hisrabi. Then the husband claims, I gave her a warning and she still transgressed. And the wife says, no, I didn't transgress at all. Or, he never warned me. If he wishes to divorce her, he can, but he must give her ksuba after she takes a swear that she hadn't transgressed. Because if she were to admit that she transgressed, and it was after a warning, so then she has no claim on a ksuba at all. Now, what does it mean a woman who is divorced because of some bad report that's been said about her, some bad reputation she's earned? The Rambam explains, it's when there are witnesses who can testify to the fact that they saw her doing something particularly unbecoming, something which indicates that there was some sin there, even though we don't have witnesses explicitly telling us about immorality, about adultery. The Rambam now illustrates, for example, if she was alone in her courtyard and they saw some passing by salesman leave, and then these witnesses came in and saw her getting up from a bed and pulling on her underwear or tying her belt, or they found some wet spit on the canopy above the bed, or they saw them together coming out of a dark place, or they saw one of them helping the other one out from some ditch or the like, or if people saw them kissing or him kissing the opening of her shirt or embracing each other, or they saw them enter a room together and lock the door, or anything along these lines. In these circumstances, if the husband wishes to divorce her, he's allowed to without having to pay her ksuba. In this case, there's no need for a warning. With regards to all these circumstances, somebody who's overes al das Moshe or das Yudas, or somebody who had acted in this obviously immoral way, here we don't force the husband to divorce her. Elim ratza lo yotzi. Rather, if he chooses not to divorce her, he doesn't have to. Aval pisha lo hotzi. Even though the husband did not choose to divorce her, ein lahen ksuba. She still has no claim to her ksuba. Why? Shaksuba takanas chami kdei shlo tei kalabein avlotia. Because the whole institution of the ksuba was so that the husband wouldn't have her easily sent away. The hikpidu el abanos yisrael hatznuos. Now Chazal, when they instituted this, only cared about the modest, proper daughters of Israel. Aval eila prutos einlan takanazu. But these immodest girls have no such enactment. Elate kalabein avlotia. You know what? It'd be a good thing if she was light in the husband's eyes to send her away. Halacha yud zayin. Misha ra ishto shizinsa, osh amra lo achas mikrovosav, o mikrovoseha, shehuma aminam, vesomechas daito alehem, shizinsa ishto. If somebody saw his wife commit adultery, or one of his close relatives or her close relatives, who he trusts and he really relies upon them, told him that his wife had committed adultery, rachmana litzlan. Ho v'simcha daito ludavar zeh, shu emes, whether it was a man or a woman who had told him this. Once he relies upon this person that this is really the truth, hariz a chayav lehotzi, v'asr lo lavo ala v'itin ksuba. In this case, the person is obligated to divorce his wife, it's forbidden to him have relations with her, and he must provide her with her ksuba. Im hodes lo, shizinsa, teitei lo ksuba. However, she admits that she committed adultery, she's not claiming otherwise, so then he divorces her without having to pay her ksuba. Lafikaf, mashbia bin nikidas chayfet, shlozinsa tachtav, imro, sa ba'atzmo, v'akachtei b'ksubasa. Therefore, if he had seen her actually have relations with his own eyes, so then he can obligate her to swear that she hadn't had relations before he has to pay her ksuba. Once she swears, a profound swear, holding onto a holy object, such as a Sefer Torah, then he's obligated to pay her ksuba. However, if he had simply been told about it from somebody who he trusted, in that case, he can make her take a swear, unless it was through a concept called Gilgul Shvua, which is essentially where you already had an obligation of a real swear upon her, and then you could roll on other swears with it, such as this one. Halachi Yudches. Amrlo ishto shizinsa tachta bertzona. Ein mashkichin l'dvareha, shema einaya nasna b'acher. If the wife tells the husband that she had committed adultery willingly, we nonetheless don't pay any attention to her words, because perhaps she just wants to marry somebody else and is using this as an excuse to divorce her husband. Aval ibda ksubasa ikar b'toseves b'idva b'loz sherei hodes b'znos. However, in this case, by her testimony, she's committed adultery, and therefore she loses every right to the ksuba. If the husband believes his wife in this case, so then he is obligated to divorce her. However, in all these circumstances, Beis Din will not force a man to divorce his wife from amongst any of these different cases until we have two witnesses who come and testify that they had seen his wife commit adultery willingly, and then at that point we will force the husband to divorce his wife because it is forbidden for him to have relations with her any longer when a wife, to be clear, commits adultery willingly, so then she is forbidden to her husband, and therefore Beis Din will force her to be divorced in this case once we have actual testimony. However, the flip side is still true. If a wife had relations with somebody else aside from her husband, but inadvertently, or it was done by rape, Rachmana Litzlan, so then she's permitted to her husband. Shnei Amar's pasuk says, "V'hi lo nitpasa, ha nitpas muteris." The case where she's held accountable by a sota is when she was not raped. That implies, were she to have been raped, so then she is still permitted to her husband. V'ein shanasa ovei kuchavim, v'ein shanasa Yisrael. This is true whether she was raped by a non-Jew or by a Jew. Now the Rambam tells us a very important rule, that if the beginning of the act of relations was done against her will, was without her consent, even though in the end she does give consent, even if she actually says that, you know, had he not raped me, I would have hired him to do so, nonetheless, she's still permitted to her husband. Because we think that once she's already begun to have relations, so then her natural desire has overcome her, even though she was initially forced, and therefore it's only become consensual after the beginning, but she's not held accountable for that. It doesn't count as adultery. Lachachav. Nashim sheganvu osan listim, harei hein kishvuyos, shehein anusos, umutaros levale. If women were captured by highwaymen, by robbers, in that case, they are considered to be captives, who were forcefully taken by these captives when they had relations with them, and therefore they're permitted to their husbands. However, if they were left alone, and nonetheless they went to the robbers on their own, they tried to seduce these highwaymen, in that case they are forbidden to their husbands. Now, with regards to the woman who acted unknowingly, and with regards to the woman who had been raped, they have the same halacha. Because Rambam explained that acting unknowingly has some element of accidental, unwilling component to it. Halacha Chaf Aleph. B'midor Amurim, B'shar Bailei Yisrael. Everything that's been said thus far is with regards to a husband who was a regular member of the Bnei Yisrael. Aval Ishes Kohen, Sheshagga Oshenensa, Asur Labaila, Sherei Nasi Zona Mikom Akom, Hu Asur B'zona, Kamo Shesbar B'Helchos Yisraibia. However, with regards to the wife of a Kohen, even if she had acted inadvertently, even if she had been raped, Nonetheless, she's forbidden to her husband because she has been halachically defined as a woman who's called a zona, an immoral woman, though in this case she might not have been particularly immoral. Nonetheless, she's defined as such halachically, and therefore she is forbidden to the husband because a kohen is forbidden to be with a zona, as will be explained later in Mishnah Torah. Halacha Chaf Beis. Echad Ishes Yisrael, O Ishes Kohen, Shenensa, Ksubasa Kayemes, Ha'ikr, Batosefes, Philip Sidem, Ksubasa Klo. Whether we are dealing with the wife of a regular member of Bnei Yisrael or the wife of a Kohen, if she was raped, her Ksuba remains the same. The basic amount, the additional amount, she hasn't lost anything. But Kohen is a Kohen, the Tainla Ksubasa Ligarsha. Now, with regards to the Kohen, who's forbidden to his wife, we force him to divorce her, however, we also force him to pay the Ksuba. Halacha Chaf Gimel. Ishes Kohen Shamar Labaila, Nenasti, Oshagagti, Venivlati Laacher. If the wife of a Kohen claims that she had been raped or she had inadvertently had relations with somebody else, we don't pay any heed to her words because perhaps she's just using this as an excuse to get divorced from this husband because she wants to marry another man. However, if the husband trusts his wife, he doesn't think she's doing this for some other reason, or somebody who he trusts had told him such, so in that case, he's obligated to divorce her and he'll also have to pay her ksuba. If a man says to his wife in front of two witnesses, don't seclude yourself with a particular man, and then she went ahead and secluded herself with that man in front of two witnesses, and she had delayed in that seclusion enough time where hypothetically they could have had relations, in that case, she has become forbidden to her husband until she has drunken the waters of the bitterness, the sota waters, as will be explained later in Mishnah Torah. If she died before he had the opportunity to have her drink that water, so then she has no claim to ksuba. This is true even if we hadn't found any of the items described above as being an act of overt immorality. Because this in of itself is about as immoral, as gross as it could possibly get. Nowadays, when there is no water of the sota to have her drink, she's forbidden to him permanently. She must be divorced without any claim on the ksuba, not the basic amount, not the excess. It was her own bad actions which caused her to become forbidden to him. The final halach in the parak. Amar la beino lebeina, al tatasri im ish ploni. The ra usa shenistra imo, the shas akdei tuma, harezu asura lav bismanazeh, shein sham me sota. If the husband says privately to his wife, don't seclude yourself with this other man, and then he saw her seclude herself with that other man, and she delayed in that time of seclusion enough where they could have potentially had relations, in that case, she's forbidden to her husband nowadays when there's no me sota. V'chayav lo tibi tinksuba. He's obligated to divorce her in this case because he knows that she had secluded herself in this fashion. But he must give her a ksuba because there are no witnesses. However, if she admits that she had secluded herself with that individual after she had been warned, therefore she will leave and not have a ksuba. Therefore, in the case where she's not admitting, the husband is able to make her take a swear that she had not secluded herself, and only at that stage is he obligated to give her a ksuba. Have a wonderful day.